he takes his toy pistol and he throws it at the blob and then he runs off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right.
I'm Austin.
And I'm Cloud.
This is Wii.
Couple are hanging out and getting to know one another, and then they see a falling star, and they wish for the town to be destroyed, or something like that, and then it ends up being the blob inside of a rock that eats an old man, and they take the old man to the doctor, and then it eats the doctor, and then the police, they think the kids are pulling a prank, and it eats some more people, attacks a theater, and then tries to consume a diner before they finally freeze it. And then transport it to the Arctic? Like, I'm from America. We're doing some scientific testing on this thing. We're not just dropping it off in the Arctic without anyone knowing about it. Like, no, it's not how... No.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
Science has proved that this is so.
Which there's none of at all in this.
No.
Sort of unusual for the thing comes from space or... the atom or wherever and attacks the town or the country or the world, and like there's no the closest we have to a scientist type character is the doctor, and he's like kind of trying to like think about it, but then
he's also kind of dead.
Yeah, he doesn't get very much time, and mostly he's thinking about the guy that it's attached to.
We're gonna have to amputate the arm, and I'm like, oh, like that's actually like smart, especially within the circumstance, since you can see how aggressive it is trying to consume him. So yeah, I like that. And it's like, but I have to wait for my nurse.
Yeah,
like, bro, you got to get started now.
Yeah, well, and she, like, he calls, it's the middle of the night, like the whole movie is the middle of the night, like the same night, even though at one point it's a little confusing towards the end where the police guy is on the phone with Washington and says, like, it's killed like several people since last night, and it's like, but it's still last night.
Yeah,
but he says, like, we'll have the sun up in a few hours, and who knows what'll happen. And so I guess he's just like, well, it's pretty far into the really early morning, so he's referring to the earlier part of last night, because we haven't seen daytime except the shot where the farmer guy runs across the road when they discover him. Looks like it's day.
Yeah.
And it's the only shot in the movie that looks like that. I don't know why it's like that. There's no reason for it to be day in that one particular one, and unless they just didn't have it and they had to shoot during the day this one time.
Well, I'd say there was about two more shots that were incredibly minor, where it kind of looks like they were trying to film something during the day, and they just forgot to cover up windows, and it's just like, ah, okay, like, we forgot to do this to make it keep looking like it's nighttime. But it wasn't so shocking where it's like, oh, that's in the middle of the day. Like, there are some of the color movies where it's just like, oh, we're trying to make it look like it's night, but we're just putting a filter on it. And you can clearly tell that we shot this in the middle of the day. Like, that's bad. This movie yeah. does not do that.
No, it does. It doesn't do that. I mean, one thing just to start with, we're supposed to believe that Steve McQueen is a teenager.
Yeah.
Which he was 28 at the time of this, which maybe you don't know specifically, but you know he's not a teenager.
He's not a kid, no.
You know, he's not, you know, 70s Steve McQueen. He's not that old yet. You know, sort of bullet Steve McQueen, where like clearly he's like 40 years old, but he doesn't look like a teenager, especially compared to the other people in the
who like, are the like they do look young.
They may not be like actually, you know, 17 or whatever they're supposed to be, but they look younger than he does.
It is, yeah.
And I'm not, he drops it off a little bit later, but during the early parts of it especially, and when he's talking to the police after the reverse street race, he's doing this kind of like OG kind of like thing with his shoulders and like the way that he moves and the like the speed that he speaks in, where it seems like he's trying to play a teenager, whatever that means.
From the late 50s.
Yeah, he's playing a late 50s teenager in the late 50s when he isn't one. But it's a little, now we can't, you know, hit it, you know, really for that, because everyone in Greece is like 35 and they're all supposed to be in high school too. And so like it's okay, but it's sort of weird.
Well, I'm going to be honest, I'm not thoroughly impressed with any of the acting in this movie. Except for like the dude who runs the little diner at the end of it, like
for like 5 minutes,
like he's like
has a strong Italian accent or something.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
To say like he's like really really Italian and he doesn't seem to understand anything that's being said. And then it's just like, we got to get to the cellar. Oh, okay. And then they just go to the cellar, and I'm like, Now, not acting, but just for the scene, there's an old man who hears the air raid sirens. And so he's like getting his defense helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's just like, wait, that's the fire department. And then he takes that one off and he has like a fire department helmet that he goes and put on. I don't know what to wear.
This has never happened before.
And I'm like, I really like that scene. Like, it's a good tension breaker, even though there wasn't any tension there to be broken.
Not really. Well, I mean, that's sort of something. And like, I have a point that I'll eventually get to later because I have a big question to ask. But that'll come towards the end. But there's not, like, we know that the blob is real and that it's out there, even though nobody has seen it but Steve.
Yeah.
Which is his character's name, too. He's playing a guy named Steve. Although like we know him as Steve McQueen because he is Steve McQueen, but the actual like on-screen credit at the beginning of the movie is actually Stephen McQueen, which was really weird to see.
Yeah,
you don't think of him as being Stephen McQueen, but you know, this is, he wasn't any, and it's not like we have to have Steve McQueen in this to fake play a teenager because he'll make people come see it. He wasn't really anybody yet here, so, or not the Steve McQueen that he would be later, so he wasn't really packing people in to see the blob because it had Steve McQueen in it. But not a whole lot happens. Like, people, I suppose, get killed, but most of the time we're not there. We just kind of hear from time to time that, like, we found the bar just, like, unlocked and no one was there and the money was still there. And it gets bigger when we see it, like, the 3 or 4 times that we do. And so we sort of understand that it's been absorbing people. But there's not very much of the, like, the giant ants are, like, chasing after people kind of stuff, or the, you know,
there's no action sequences.
No, there's not action, and there's not even that much, like, and also it feels, I guess, the sort of intent is that eventually it'll just keep absorbing people and, like, take over the world or something in a little Shop of Horrors kind of way. But because there's no, like, scientist character or anything to tell us this, the people keep saying, nothing can stop it, which actually is what the poster says, too, which is indescribable, indestructible, nothing can stop it. But people come to that conclusion really quickly.
It's the most horrible thing I've ever seen.
Like, the nurse is like, the doctor says, try the acid, as she tries the acid and it doesn't do anything, and she says, nothing can stop it. It's like, you tried one thing, how do you know that nothing can stop it? And like, it turns out something can stop it, it's just not the thing that, or sort of stop it, I guess. But everyone is really convinced, like, there's no way to kill it, we can't kill it. And, you know, in the day the earth stood still, they have, like, the scientist guys and the army and whoever, they're checking out the ship after, and, like, Gort's standing over there, he hasn't moved in a super long time, and they're trying to figure out a way, you know, it's Kenny's, you know, famous, like, put a hole in it. Like, that's, they're trying stuff, and they're like, we tried everything. We tried the torch, we tried the dynamite, we can't make a hole in it. They've tried a few things before they come to the conclusion that it's really hard to put a hole in this thing. And that doesn't really happen. Like, people try one thing and just lose all hope. We can't, nothing can stop it, nothing can kill it. What are we gonna do?
Speaking of losing all hope, this is one of the few times where it's like we have a character scream and it doesn't carry on. It goes on for like a second and a half and then she stops, and I was so happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, thank God. And it's appropriate. It's appropriate because, you know, like, she, like, the dog flails and she falls down. So it's not like, oh, well, if you did, like, it was a really good setup. And so they're in the little supermarket thing that Steve McQueen's dad runs. And Steve sees the thing kind of go around the corner of the aisle, and he's just like, nope, and jumps up and over the aisle to the next aisle to get her. And I'm just like, all right, see, this is smart thinking. I like this.
And she's like half in a faint or something. But, well, I
picks her up and he evacs.
I like his character because he is active. He does do things, and he's thinking about stuff, and he has questions, and he doesn't. Like, he's, I guess she does too. She comes sneaking out of the house, even though they didn't really talk to each other about it. But he's got ideas, and he has thoughts, and he's not, he doesn't, like, the police are like, just give up. Which they also don't put him in jail or something stupid either. There's the one guy that is the, like, ex-army guy that seems to have a chip about how he used to be in the army. Which they even tell us. The other guy is even like, he used to be in the army and he wants to thinks everybody's after him or something. And
the
which,
kids, they just want the kids, to put me down because they know I have a military record.
Which I guess that was sort of. It's weird though, because at this point, he's 58, so he could have been in Korea, I guess, right? Because that was in like the early mid 50s. And because. He doesn't look, I mean, he could have been in World War II, I guess. That only ended 14 years before. What is 46, right? Or 47?
Something like that.
46, I think. Should know this. And I have known it at other times, but cause we've talked about World War II in a relatively commonplace way on the show. So it's not, not the first time. But I don't know if that's really like something that would be going on. But the other guy is much more reasonable about what's going on. And he's like, I don't really know what's going on, but I'm not going to like make a big deal out of it until I know what's going on. He's not a lot of help because he also doesn't really believe them. But he doesn't have any proof either.
Well, like, okay,
and it's better than just the, like, clearly staring at the evidence of the thing that's happening and being like, that can't happen, and continuing to not do anything while the town gets eaten.
Well, okay, so
sometimes.
Whenever Steve and the lady show up with the police to look for the doctor because he swears he saw the doctor be eaten, David, I didn't believe that's his name, David, the cop, the lead sergeant, he goes, well, they obviously weren't doing anything. And if the doctor is supposed to be in this area at this time, then we'll just get a hold of him in that area in this time to see if the story checks out. So there's not too much I can do right now, but I know I can get an answer to move forward at this time.
And the kids aren't going to leave town or anything.
And so I'm going to get their parents. We're going to drop them. We're going to get the parents to come get them, so we're not having to keep them overnight. And then whenever the morning comes, you know, I can just make the phone calls and then we can actually pursue this to find out what's going on. And that's what he does. And that's intelligent. Like, that's what I would expect as a smart move. There was no reason to hold the kids. That would have been extra work for him to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to actually, well, because remember, no one had cell phones at this time. So it's like, What else could he have done that would have been productive, that would have made things solve quicker? And I can't think of anything. And then later on, after the kids do the siren bit, I can see like, okay, well, this has gone too far. The air raid siren's on. They're waking up the entire town. I'll probably put them like in the drunk chamber or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, put him in the cell. Just is like, okay, you pushed it too far. You should have been in bed. But they get there and it's just like, listen, this thing is in the shop. It just attacked me and Jessica. And then it's just like, okay, well, we're going to go in here. And that's essentially what they do is they go into the store and they check it out. But by the time they come out of it and it's like, oh, yeah, there's nothing in there. That's whenever the theater starts panicking because it's in the theater attacking them.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes from a situation where the police would show up and handle it and go, okay, well, if nothing happened at the theater, then they probably would have rounded them up and taken them back to the station. But because something at the theater did happen, now we can take them and move them forward in the story as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the cops did in this movie is something that I would say is good police work.
Well, when they're at the doctor's office, the story kind of goes through a reasonable, like, things keep getting cut off as ways to prove the story in like a way that makes sense, because he's like, well, he's not here and he was supposed to be out of town. And he's like, well, I saw him, and then check for the car. And she's like, well, sometimes he rides with the other doctor. And so they call the other doctor and they're like, well, he's not there, so we'll have to wait until morning. And there's like, regular,
good
ordinary
riding.
Yeah, there's regular, ordinary obstacles, and it's not just like, well, why would we bother to try and call, or what, you know, the car is gone for some mysterious reason or something.
Because it was at the shop, and it was actually being worked on by the mechanic guy that was eaten as well.
Yeah.
Which happened for some reason I wasn't really sure of, but at least it was an interesting scene.
It's just something else. It's just so we see something else happen. So we continue to be worried that, like, oh, it's still out there, because we do go long stretches where we don't see it.
Yeah.
While they're looking around for it, or while they're talking about it, or they're alerting the townsfolk or something, and we don't actually see it for really long time periods. And so it's out there somewhere doing something.
Like, other than seeing it on the old guy's hand, and then it attacking the nurse and doctor, we go like 47 minutes with almost nothing really happening outside of like that, like those little events.
Yeah.
And then when it escalates really fast.
Yeah. It's really like the last 20, like it attacks the movie theater. There's like 20 minutes left or 20 something minutes left. And then it stays like continuous with the situation to the end. But yeah, before that, because it's only an hour and a half long altogether. And so there's an hour where mostly we don't see it, except for a time here or there.
But that's all right, because the movie itself, like the progression of the story, does move pretty smoothly.
Yeah, it's not like people just stand around and stare at each other when every now and then the blob comes along and eats one of them.
Yeah, it does a really good job of like staying active enough and keeping your attention, that as it develops these characters in some kind of way, you can grow to them as much as the blob grows off of the town.
Although it does seem like maybe the characters progress a little much at one point, because she says that she believes Steve because she knows him.
A whole 5 hours
at the beginning of the movie, which maybe they are like boyfriend girlfriend, but she seems sort of like, are you giving me a line or something? And it's like, well, we drove up to what seems pretty clearly like a makeout point kind of place, and unless this is the first time that you've been out, in which case it's weird to just drive straight to makeout point, she would know him, I guess, but she doesn't seem to, because she doesn't, because he's like, I come here a lot. And she's like, oh, with other girls. And he's like, no, because I like to watch the shooting stars, like, really, which I guess is true. I don't know, really, because it does seem like the other teens are not really his friends, but it seems like it's kind of a small town, so like everybody at the high school knows each other.
Yeah, I grew up in a town like that, and essentially that's how it is. It's like, hey, I know Megan. I'm not really friends with her, but if I drive by, I'll say hi. You know, oh, look, that's Jonathan. What's up, Jonathan? I hope you crash on your way home tomorrow, you son of a bitch.
That's not very nice.
Jonathan wasn't very nice. He's also not a real person. To say that people named Jonathan aren't real people. There are just...
Is this like a Ginger's thing?
No, like, I'm thinking of like The Matrix, where it's just like, you know...
there is no Jonathan?
Like Agent Smith. Like, they're not real.
Oh. Okay. I guess.
Yeah. Because unless your name is Johnny Thin or Johnny Than. Johnny Bravo.
Even the parents are pretty reasonable. Where they're like, they show up to the police and the guy who's the school principal, who's the Jane's dad,
yeah, Jane's
is like, why the town? What will the town think if they know that I had to pick up my daughter at the police station in the middle of the night? Which... He got called by the police in the middle of the night to come pick up his daughter from the police station and went ahead and bothered to, like, put on his suit and tie to come out in public, which seems very 50s of him. Which the nurse does, too. The nurse shows up in the middle of the night to help the doctor with this emergency amputation. She shows up in her nurse uniform, which seems not really necessary since they're not, like, it's not business hours and who else is going to see.
Yeah.
So people show up ready for the, although, and he, like, Steve's dad also has a suit and tie, but his is a little more like, but his is a lot more rumpled looking, where it looks like, yeah, I've got to throw something on. His tie isn't the right length and the jacket's kind of wrinkled. And so it doesn't seem like, I guess I live in the 50s. I have to put on a suit to come out in public, but like the principal guy looks like he could be going to school. Like he's clean and ready.
Well, even with that, whenever they show up to the station and he kind of has his little fit about having to pick up his daughter, and it's just like, no, like we think the doctor was murdered and we were like reporting it. Then it's just like, okay, well, that's not good, but that's definitely better than you being arrested for something.
Yeah.
And so,
but
like,
they don't just totally freak out.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like lock her in the house like the Nightmare on Elm Street dad does. And so it's not, they're much more calm than sometimes people are in that kind of circumstance.
And the kid, the younger son,
the little brother. Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of funny because when he shows up,
with his cap gun.
He's so loud, and she even tells him.
Oh,
to
in
shush.
The house, yeah.
She tells him to shush because she's trying to sneak out.
I'm trying to sneak out here,
and he's like, "But I gotta guard you." Like, listen, all right. Like, I can poke you in the eye. Just go back to bed, all right. And then he decides, I want to go sleep on the couch, and I'm like, hey, even as a kid, there's been times where I've had to go sleep on the couch because either my room was too hot or, like, something would happen where I wasn't as comfortable sleeping in my bed than I was going in the living room, plopping down on the couch. I didn't make noise. I didn't make a fuss. I just went to bed. I just happened to be asleep on the couch. And that's kind of what this kid does. You know, like, he doesn't wake the entire house up to go do it. He just goes and lays on the couch. And then, like, when the parents finally wake up because of all the sirens and the wife just loses her mind. And then it's just like, oh, the kid's right here on the couch. Oh, there's Daddy. He's just lying asleep here. Oh, calm down. Your kid's right there. All right. He's sleepy. He's tired. He doesn't know what's going on. Why are we getting? I was guarding you. From what? I don't know. Obviously, I'm doing a good job because nothing's happened.
Yeah.
All right. Let me sleep. And then he comes around and he's like, I'm going to pop this motherfucker with his little cap gun, and I'm like, all right, so he was annoying, and I was hoping the blob was going to eat him, but now I like him, because he's like, I ain't scared, I'm going to bust this guy, and And then after he realizes that he has no more rounds left, he takes his toy pistol and he throws it at the blob and then he runs off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right. All right. Like, this kid, he's got some techniques down. He knows what he knows to do, and he evac'd, and they managed to save him in the end.
Yeah. No one says the blob.
No.
Like, we don't have the, like, screaming the blob like we do the them scream or various other things. The old guy, like, pointing and saying, Gojira. Like, there's nothing, yeah. There's no on-screen spoken naming of it. They just refer to it as a monster or the monster.
It's the worst thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, the worst thing I've ever seen.
I also
nothing can stop it.
I think that's something, because I mentioned it when we were watching this movie, but that's something I kind of think about from time to time, is the terms that we use. You know, it's like, they don't ever say the blob, but when they ask him to describe it, he can't describe it. Now, granted...
Well, that's the other part of the poster. It's indescribable.
But the problem is it is describable even without having to say a blob. Like, you can say it looks like jelly, or the fact that this or the fact that this is, you know, almost essentially a gelatinous cube, only without it being a cube or in a dungeon, and it seems to be from space. Gelatinous cubes are like monsters in like D&D. You know, like you're dungeon crawling, and then like, you know, you have like a pathway, and then there's a cube that fits in the pathway, so you gotta like find a way through it. But it's essentially the blob. That kind of thing.
Well,
you know, like there's words
there
that
are
we
words,
can use,
yeah.
But
he's
it also,
16 or something, I guess, because he's the only one that sees it until everyone sees it. So,
but see, that's the thing is like, even then, like, how would you have described it if that was like what you would have known of in 58? Because things have changed and our vocabularies have changed, you know, would he call it like a giant red snot? Like it looked like a big red loogie.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what words there would have been that would have been commonplace to use. This is not, well, I guess it's 62 years ago now, so it's a while ago. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not really sure what the words. But there could, I mean, we know that the word blob existed because in this time, because they named the movie that.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, you have blobs of this or that. Giant red dollop from space. You know, there are words you could use. Now, there is some controversy with how it got the name. One of which is that some the That 70s Show naming kind of way, or like Blur's song too, like we just didn't come up with anything else, or like somebody, it was called this for a while and that just ended up being right. But the, because supposedly, at least in one of the stories, it was originally supposed to be called the Molten Meteor. And then
that's a horrible name.
Someone was referring, perhaps the screenwriter was heard by the producers referring to the monster itself as the blob, just in describing it for some other purpose while they were talking about it, or that it was that way in the script. And so then they were like, let's call it that. Although,
hey, that's pretty good.
At least what we evidently have as the shooting versions of the script, when the monster is referred to, it's called the Mass, not the Blob. And yeah. So it may not be that. And then they thought maybe they would call it the Glob, which is a word we didn't even think of using to describe it, although that's a word that you could use. It is a glob, I guess.
I don't know, the giant red dollop from space is pretty catchy.
But they discovered that there was a book called that, and so they thought that they couldn't use it because they didn't understand that you can't copyright a title. And so then they changed it to the Blob. But all of that is very difficult to say what's true and what's not, and no one knows for sure. So it's it doesn't seem to be a case of like we invented this word in this movie and that's why we have blobs of things. But it's hard to say what the other direction is either. None of those other titles are good.
No.
Now, The Blob is not really that great a title either, necessarily. We know that that's what it's called now, and it's been a really around a long time, and it's a significant movie. And so it just sounds okay, because we've just always, you know, The Blob has always existed for us in particular, so we've never known a time when there wasn't a movie called The Blob, and so we just sort of accept
it. I don't like thinking of a time that exists without a movie called The Blob.
But it is kind of a generic, kind of plain title. It's a the something that's, you know, it's a short generic word.
Well, I don't know. Like, just kind of thinking of short and simple titles, like, if this was to be called, like, Red Mass, just as an example, something like Red Mass is a cool name, but it doesn't really fit with the tone of the movie.
No.
If you were to call it the Gloop or something like that, that sounds too silly.
Yeah, that sounds closer to The Stuff.
Yeah, and like The Stuff, while I think it's a good movie, is kind of silly.
Yeah.
And so like you have like The Blob, and I think blob is like such a neutral kind of term.
Yeah.
That it doesn't invoke any kind of feeling other than like visually picturing something that might be a blob.
Yeah.
And then outside
kind of shapeless
of,
and
yeah,
don't really know what else.
Except for when I hear The Blob, my first thought always goes to that scene in Origins Wolverine.
Which I've seen, but I don't remember what you're talking about.
He goes, it's when Logan goes back to like one of these areas where like it's the people that he knows because Sabretooth is hunting him. And like the black guy is running like some kind of wrestling arena training ground or whatever. And then one of the guys that was there when they were searching for the Animanium in Africa, he ends up like his mutant power triggers and he gets like super fat and big and he is The Blob. And then he's like, yeah, why don't you just hop into a ring in here with him? And he does. And he's like, listen here, bud. Like,
did you just call me Blob?
Because that's the character's name, Blob. He's supposed to be like one of Magneto's Brotherhood members. Remember like him, Toad,
yeah.
Juggernaut, Sabretooth, Mystique, Pyro, that one guy who can multiplicate himself. But yeah, The Blob was like one of like the strong men, if you will. Like, hey, I need someone really big and really dumb who has a lot of muscle to go over there and move that. Okay, boss. And then he just tumbles over there. And that's kind of, they just made him really nasty looking in the movie.
Mm.
But, you know, since Logan says bub, he says bub. And the guy's like, did you just call me Blob? Because he's supposed to be sensitive about his weight. That's the joke.
So when this was made, nobody thought like that much of it, like the people who were making it. And Paramount, it was made independently, and then Paramount who bought it for about, I don't know, like twice as much as it costs to make, well, maybe like three times as much as it costs to make it, and released it as a double feature, you know, mainly for the drive-in market. The other movie being I Married a Monster from Outer Space. And like they thought it was just like, that's just you know, cheap thing, you know, there's a monster in it, there's teens in it, you know, Steve McQueen, this is like the first Steve McQueen movie, which even at the time, critics were like, eh. And critics were pretty much like that about basically the whole thing, even though it was sort of popular with people who saw it. But we still remember it.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, 62 years later, there's a Criterion edition of this. Nobody remembers I Married a Monster from Outer Space, although Stephen King does, and he talks about it in On Writing as a movie that he remembers seeing in among the like many, many cheap monster movies that he remembers seeing as a kid. But nobody remembers I Married a Monster from Outer Space. But we remember The Blob, despite its generic title. and not a whole lot going on in it, in like, you know, big monstery attack kind of terms.
Well,
so why? What is it? Why do we remember the blob when we don't remember so many of these other just cheap things that are sort of similar to it?
Well, see, you're hitting on a lot of stuff I've been thinking of lately. And I'm going to have to ask you to stop doing that because you got my brain like all on. The processor is running hot and the water cooling system shot. All right. All right. So I have a feeling that the blob falls into this criteria of this was a movie that came out that was good enough to be enjoyable, but not exactly good enough to be groundbreaking. But there was a group of people who liked it so much that they carried its legacy on to the point that it got a remake. And because it got a remake, people will either remember this or the remake and enjoy one or the other. And then I have a feeling that there are people who enjoy this movie not because they think it's good, but because they think that they're supposed to think that it's good. Because honestly, I do not like the acting. I think the acting in this movie is pretty subpar.
Yeah,
there's nothing scary about this. I didn't feel the slightest bit of fear, even by this kind of standard. There was no tension, no suspense, mostly because it is it's 2020 and this is made in 58. And so it doesn't hold as much weight for me as something newer might comparatively. I mean, we still talk about the first Alien movie, and that movie is still intense, even though it is as old as it is.
Yeah, it's still 20 years more recent, though.
Exactly. And so, but I have a feeling, because like I remember liking this movie because I thought it was fun. Mm-hmm. Fun. Not good. Fun. But I remember the remake being better.
You remember the 80s one.
Yeah. And I also feel like that's the same thing with like The Thing. Like there's the original Thing. I don't hear people talk about that. But then somebody liked that movie to the point where they were like, hey, John Carpenter, that's my name. Don't wear it out. I'm going to make The Thing. And then everybody loves John Carpenter's The Thing. And I'm almost afraid that there's people who talk about like Hollywood drying up, like there's no more fresh, original, unique, new ideas. And there's too many remakes. And while I do kind of agree with some of this, I get tired of seeing remakes of good movies. I want to see remakes of bad movies where someone's attempting to make them good, because there's a lot of potential in movies that exist. And it's just like, well, here was this idea and it failed, but it didn't mean that was a bad idea. It just happened to not be executed properly. And I'm almost afraid that The Blob is going to be like that if it gets another remake.
That it'll be better?
That it'll be worse.
Oh.
Because they keep trying to take good movies and remaking them, and they're not good remakes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's going to be like 100 years down the line, and people aren't going to remember the original originals. They're going to remember the original remakes. And then, you know, you're going to have like 15 remakes of like Freddy and then Jason. And then Halloween, and then Blob, and Aliens, and then all of the ones that were important. It's like, oh yeah, well, we watch them. We didn't really enjoy them because it's not this time period. But, you know, we're still going to say they're good because we're supposed to say they're good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there is something to looking at old films where you can't, or old anything really, that it's not fair to look at it and try to hold it up to whatever standard is at the particular time.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, when you're talking about film, the beginning of film is still pretty recent in terms of like various kinds of art. Like the first like real films are in the, you know, like the early, like the teens, where even though they didn't have sound yet, they were still like trying stuff. They were making full length things, and they were making things that were actually telling stories and weren't just one reel. And, you know, that's just a little over 100 years ago, which seems like a long time, but isn't really that long. And there's not as much difference as there might be for something that's been around that long and that either that long or not that long, depending on which one you decide it is. But you have to kind of look at films and say, well, what else was going on at the time? And what do other films around this time and before look like? And is this a step back or a step forward? Or is it, you know, is it just kind of a workmanlike attempt at whatever was going on? Which seems like what really what this is, this version of this is this, like, well, it, you know, there's a monster and there's some things that go on and some people die and there's some effects to look at. And it was in color, at least, which was not necessarily super common for really cheap kind of exploitative horror monster type movies at this time. And like the effects such as they are decently effective for like seeing the, except for when it's a, like attached itself to the whole diner, like that looks like really like animated and strange.
Yeah.
But the rest of the time where it's just like, you know, it's seeping through vents or it's crawling along over there, it's all stuff that works pretty well. Although what color red it is varies in every shot we see it in. It's never the same color red anytime.
So because I was thinking about it, I decided I wanted to look up, and all I did is I just Googled great movies from the 50s. And then it was just like, I don't care about Oscar winners. I think a lot of award shows are bogus. But it just popular movies that were listed. And I have Rear Window, which I would say is better than The Blob. Yeah. No.
I don't think people are going to fight with you about that.
I mean, I'm going to be as fair. Only movies from the 50s. And then you got North by Northwest. And while I would say North by Northwest is better than The Blob, I like The Blob more than North by Northwest. Rebel Without a Cause. Strangers on a Train. 12 Angry Men. The Bridge on River Kwai, Vertigo, The Day the Earth Stood Still,
which is earlier.
Yeah. Rashomon, Seven Samurai, Forbidden Planet, which there's a poster of Forbidden Planet, but it says something about vampires on it. Yeah. Like, what is this? Ben-Hur, The Seventh Seal, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Touch of Evil, Ten Commandments, Wild Strawberries, Howard Hawks production, The Thing.
Uh-huh. So it's
from 51.
Right. Yeah. So much, much earlier, even.
And then Creature from the Black Lagoon, which is one of my favorites. And then, like, the list just goes on and on and on. And it's like, yeah, there's a lot of great movies. So I would say, like, comparatively, if people were to remember any of the other ones that I listed and not remember The Blob, then I would say that's okay. But if someone's like, oh yeah, I remember, like, I Married a Monster, what's The Blob?
Yeah.
Then we might have an issue.
That would be the thing that was weird, which I don't know that there's anything wrong with I Married a Monster from Outer Space. I've never seen it.
The Atomic Brain.
But there are things wrong with The Atomic Brain.
Yeah.
Even though it's fun. But it does just seem, you know, you never know what the things are going to be that are the things that make it through time. But there does seem to have been something about this one. I mean, and sometimes it's like almost like forced, where, you know, something like The Wizard of Oz was not really popular when it came out.
Yeah.
People didn't really know what to do with it and they didn't really care. And then the, like, you know, like ultra classicsness of it really started because no one really cared that much about it, and so it was really cheap to buy to play on TV when, like, movies were looking, or TV stations were looking for things to put on TV, and so they put it on TV a lot, and so people saw it a lot. And
how long did that go on for? Because I remember seeing it on TV.
Way before, you know, before us.
Because I'll tell you what, I mean,
it's still on TV a lot, but, like, it was on TV a lot, and so it just kind of became this thing, and then people attached to it, but it was later, and it was just because it was on all the time. Although, you know, the Mighty Ducks movies were on TV all the time, and they're not, you know, held up as great accomplishments of film.
Well, I wonder if it's a combination between some of the effects during the creation of The Wizard of Oz and its connection to like childhood stories.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because it's like, hey, you know, like, yeah, it didn't do that great. I mean, it was made spectacularly.
Yeah, well, the thing it's is, because The Wizard of Oz is an authentically great film. Like, yeah. It should be important. It just, people didn't notice it at first.
And then, well, see, I'm wondering, like, if the reason attention was brought to it is because the people who brought the attention to it are the people who grew up with it on TV and not the people who originally saw it when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just like, oh yeah, I remember being like 7 years old and it was being played on TV and no one cared. And then like 20 years later, I'm now running this award show thing. And I'm like, no, like, you have to understand just how good this was. It's important for film and it's important to me because it was my childhood. And now we're just going to repeat this 50 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, something like that.
The thing is also, you know, The Wizard of Oz is from 1939 and like, all of the, like, we could if we were going to like start the ultra classics, like anchor the ultra classics sub series that we may eventually get around to doing, 1959, you can find like six of them. Like it's this like anchor year that's this, there's so many of the great, what are held up as the great classic movies. And so now, I guess it's not really that fair, because The Wizard of Oz did get a nomination for Best Picture, but it didn't win because Gone with the Wind did. It wasn't that popular with people, and then it kind of just went away for a number of years. But you have Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and Stagecoach, which is like the movie that made John Wayne John Wayne. And, you know, when he stopped being a singing cowboy and actually became John Wayne.
John Wayne. That's a terrible cowboy.
You know, the 30s version of The Man in the Iron Mask. Like, you just have all of these big movies. And in 38 also, and then in 40 and 41. And so you have just like a bunch of things to get buried underneath. And, you know, in the late 50s, there were a lot of let's go to the drive-in and watch a monster eat people or something. Kind of movies, or maybe you married the monster and it was for outer space kind of movies at the same time even. And so there was plenty of opportunity for this to get buried, and it didn't. And I guess, you know, there are visual things too that show up other places. Like if you watch Ghostbusters 2, you can see the blob like all over it because, you know, I guess obviously the slime is red and it's the thing that's attacking. But there's like things like it squishing through the vent into the projection booth. Like that image, the slime squishing through the vent, is like exactly the same as a shot that happens in Ghostbusters 2 in the museum. And so there are just these things that have people doing work in this type of movie or related adjacent types of movies are like reaching back to this and pulling things from it. And the thing is that it's fine. It is fine.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's not like I cannot, you know, this, it's not Manos Hands of Fate or Plan 9. It's not like objectively terrible and like people enjoy it because it's so a car accident in progress that you're just watching,
the train wreck that you can't look away from.
It's fine, you know, it's just fine. But it's just fine except there's something about it.
Well, I'm wondering, okay, because like you mentioning Ghostbusters, and I would say that would be a good callback to like the use of practical effects.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, hey, like, we have to do this. We're not CG'ing it. We're really going to do it. Well, how are we going to do it? Well, how, like, they did it in that movie. How did they do it? Okay, well, we'll just do it the way they did it.
Yeah, well, there is in practical effects, this less so now because there isn't that much of it anymore. And like all of the old people are dead mostly. But there has been this long tradition of like people sort of just making their way into effects or you know, makeup effects or stop motion and these kinds of things, where, you know, you'd be some young guy and you'd come in and you'd work with this old guy that's been doing it since the 40s. And there was this whole, like, this is how you do these things. It's how we've done these things. And then a lot of that gets lost when every movie isn't doing these things. So you don't need that many people, because now we can do it with computers. And so it's becoming sort of a lost thing. Like, there's still people that know it, but there are a lot fewer of them than there used to be. And, you know, like, some of it's collected into books and stuff. But because there is that, like, this is how you do these things, this reaching back to an old movie that did this similar thing to what we're trying to do here, like, that makes sense. But it, like, the vent shot seems, like, directly referential, because it's exact, almost. Like, it seems like it's this shot from The Blob, and we have this red stuff, so we should, like, make some kind of reference to that. And so it seems like they're thinking about, yeah, remember The Blob? Which at that point is, I guess it could be either one, because I think the Chuck Russell remake is 88 and Ghostbusters 2 is 89, I think. And I don't know if that particular shot appears in the remake also. Now, there is the thing of the question mark at the end, which there was a sequel at the time that's called Son of the Blob, which I haven't seen. And so I don't know whether it, like, picks up directly or not. But it's it does kind of end real fast, where it's just like, well, we're going to have the government come and pick it up. And then the next shot is
the government came and picked it up
and they drop it in the Arctic. And it's the end. And then it's a question mark.
We know better.
Yeah, I guess.
Plus, you know, it did shrink in size as they were using the CO2.
It did shrink in size, yeah.
So, like, I'm wondering, like, how much can it be condensed as it freezes solid comparatively?
Well, I mean, I guess they probably didn't freeze it solid with the fire extinguishers.
No, I'm just saying, like,
that's probably not the smallest it can possibly be.
No, I'm just saying, like, okay. So what I'm thinking of is,
it was really small when it was inside the meteor.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so you have it. It's in the meteor. It lands onto a planet. It starts consuming matter. All right. And right now it's consuming people, maybe because people are nutrient rich for its growth cycle. So let's say it grows to the point that now it just covers every area. We'll just say Ohio, for example. It can cover, like, all of the surface area of Ohio. Because it's doing that, why would it not absorb other organic material, like the plant life? Any animal that it can touch, obviously, anything that would be digestible, until it grew to the size that it would be able to cover the entire Earth, because it could also absorb the water.
Mm.
All right. And so what happens when it gets so big that it does cover the entire planet? All right. What happens if the planet decides it's going to break up? This could be what caused it to be in space to begin with. And because of the way that thermodynamics work in space, maybe it lost so much of its heat that it caused it to shrink. And then it just collected other debris because of its material, which formed the meteor. And then it just landed on this planet. And so by freezing it, you know, like just with the CO2, and it kind of contracts and gets smaller, then they take it and then they put it in the Arctic, where it is cold, and it just keeps getting colder and colder and colder until it does recondense itself back into its original state, or at least something small enough after the other mass that it's absorbed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Hmm.
hey, I'm a galactic brain trying to come up with a self-replicating creature that I can shoot off into space to destroy all sentient life and then some. I gotta come up with something.
Well, that is always the question in these kinds of things. Like, so this thing is off there floating around in space, but like, besides that, like, what, like, why is it the way that it is? Now, I guess just something, you know, weird things happen in other places that are different from, or they're weird because they're different from how things turned out here. But I guess, like, things could happen differently as long as they follow, like, basically physical processes that we understand. And so I guess it could just happen to be, you know, it's like a germ or something. And it just happens to be that that's how it works. Or it could be a weapon or something. There's no, you know, it doesn't wrap part of its blobbiness around the president's neck and show it all the planets that it's destructed before for its various purposes. So
yeah,
there's a, it doesn't have a why, which sometimes is what you want. You know, that's the thing that, you know, one of the three or four primary things that makes Slender Man scary is that there's no why and there's not really any what. Like, you don't really know what's going on, but he's scary. Which also we're going to at least see it. I guess maybe we're going to do it on the show. I don't know. But either way, sometime soonish, we're going to watch Color Out of Space.
Yay!
And so in preparation for that, I read the Color Out of Space story, which is not that long. And at least in like basic premise, this is sort of like derived from that in a way. Like, a thing crashes close to a farmer's house and the, you know, it's this rock thing, and then they crack it open and inside there's a something that's indescribable, which, you know, this is touting itself to be as well. And then over time, various evil happens because of that, which is where the split sort of happens, because like, there is a something and it does cause, you know, things to happen. And it seems like in some cases there is like a blob like thing that comes out and like dissolves people, but no one ever really gets a good look at it. And like, the way that the story is structured is that it's being told to a guy by a guy that was there, and it all happened like 30 years ago or something. And so he has only like pieced together information. But so I guess there is sometimes like a blobbiness shows up and does absorb a person or something. So even that is related. But in that, there's a lot more just like, you don't really, like, there's no why, there's no what, just stuff is just weird, and it's getting worse, and no one can do anything because no one really understands it, and you can kind of not really describe it. And so, like, here, no one seems to be able to describe it, but they just don't seem to be trying very hard. And there is a, like, way out, kind of. Like, they do drop it in the Arctic, and it stops, which is not what happens. And Color Out of Space, the story, I don't know what is going to happen in the movie. Although I am concerned that like, such a heavy amount of the story leans on that there's these weird colors that are related to the thing, and the thing itself is like this weird color that is such a not of this earth color that you can't put it into words, and you just kind of like have to see it, and you can only kind of like have analogies for it, but those don't really describe it. And so like, that's fine when you're writing a story, because then you can just like imagine a thing you can't quite imagine. But when you make a movie, you have to show something. And so like, what color is the color out of space? It's not supposed to be a color that we can see or understand in a direct way. And so you have to kind of figure it out. Having that be recent in my mind, I saw a lot of it in this, in a way that I hadn't really thought about before. But that just has so much more like dread and creepiness and like discomfort, at like, even though almost nothing is described in any kind of like graphic way. It's, and here people say, you know, that we're all going to die or something if we don't do something, but it doesn't have that same, like, the blob is out there and it's eventually going to get, even in the way that like Invasion of the Body Snatchers does, where there is this sort of like overhanging threat of like, you don't know who's who and you might be a pod person anytime now. And there's just sort of like creeping in of like more and more people are not people anymore. And it gets hard to get out of it, which, as we talked about there, people, some people think is like a communism metaphor. The people who made it said that that wasn't what they meant. This, according to the people that made it, is not what they meant. But a guy named Jeff Charlotte wrote a book, and he describes that the blob is about the creeping horrors of communism. And
because the blob is red.
Well, because the blob is red, I suppose.
Insert Russian theme song.
And it's creeping and it's getting larger and larger. And take it away. Yeah, I guess. But no. Like, no Jeff Charlotte. And the writers of the script are like, what are you talking about? That's not what we meant.
Bruh.
We weren't making a metaphor for communism. Stop it. I guess probably everything in the 50s is a metaphor for communism in some way, even if nobody meant it, because it's just, you
know, it existed in the 50s.
Yeah, it existed in the 50s.
I barely recognize this country anymore. The government's got us seeing communists in our soup.
So I guess you see communists in the blob and communists in the pod people and wherever else you might happen to look. So maybe we can't blame Jeff Charlotte that much. Although we can still tell him that he's not correct. So how do we feel about stars?
I'm giving it 4 stars. Like, if it had maybe a little bit better suspense, maybe some better acting, like just take one more element that I thought was weak, and then just actually make that good. And I would say, okay, between this, this was good and I had a lot of fun. So it is 5, but I only had a lot of fun and therefore it's a 4. Plus, I remember liking the one from the 80s way more.
1 star more.
Yeah.
1 star later.
Wait, that's not how the system works.
No.
4 red stars? Communism?
No, because it's not about communism. But I guess it probably is. Yeah, it has to be 4, I guess. Yeah, the acting's no good. Like, mostly, yeah, the acting is no good. But, you know, even though we know that Steve McQueen will later be a good actor.
And that didn't mean that he was always a good actor.
It didn't mean he was always good. But also, he's so busy, you know, acting with his gee whiz shoulders that, like, he doesn't have time to be to be acting as the character. He's too busy pretending to be 17.
I'm sorry, Officer David. I didn't mean to be racing backwards.
Yeah. Oh, that's something I forgot. That there's a lot of mirror stuff happening here, where like people look into mirrors and see things. Like he looks in the mirror and sees the traffic light that they're gonna race to and has the idea, and the doctor like looks in the mirror and sees the body of the And so there's like looking into mirrors at things.
Mirrors work.
They do.
Science has proved that this is so.
And the other thing, he gives us a measurement that even if it's hard to like picture in some sort of exact way, seems to be a bit more of at least a familiar measurement than the one, you know, we've had for a long time. The
something, he didn't know what, but something as big as a battleship had just flown over and passed him. at speed so great he couldn't begin to estimate it.
You know, and we've said, like, well, but how big do you have, like, an idea of how big a battle does it, how bigger than a battleship mean anything to you? And, you know, I guess everybody who was in the war maybe has seen a battleship, and so maybe they have some idea. But he says it was probably as big as a moon before, like the asteroid that hit, which it probably wasn't, because then we'd probably not be there to have discovered this tiny crater that this little yeah. piece of it is left in. Now, maybe he means when it was way out in space and it's bumped into other things and had pieces, but it didn't enter the atmosphere the size of a moon. He says a moon, not the moon, which is interesting, too. So I guess maybe moons vary in size, so maybe it isn't quite as accurate a measurement as a battleship, which does have a fairly standard size, even if maybe you don't know what that size is in some precise way. But it's at least a different form of measurement. He doesn't say it was probably as big as a battleship before it crashed here. Although it might have been. That's a much more reasonable size than a moon for something to come through the atmosphere and crash and not kill us all. So you were talking about remakes. In 2009, it was reported that Rob Zombie was going to make a remake of it. But then he stopped that. But so
I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess maybe he was just going about remaking various old horror movies, because he did do at least two, right? Like he did the Halloween one, and then wasn't he also involved in other? At least one other of, like, the major ones. I can't remember. I don't think he directed it, but
I think so.
I can't remember which one.
Yeah,
it was.
I'm not 100% on top of that.
So maybe he is.
I know more or less, like, the movies that he made, like, originally.
Yeah, but he does a lot of producing too. A lot of involving himself in things. And so I don't know. I feel like I don't want Rob Zombie's The Blob.
No, I don't think I would either.
I don't think. Which I guess maybe he turned out he didn't either, because he stopped. But we it's a thing that we might could have had. And if you live in Pennsylvania, the town of Phoenixville, which is the most of the town exteriors, including where the theater was, were shot. They have a yearly Blob Fest where they Aww. Celebrate the Blob having been made there and reenact the people running out of the movie theater while the Blob chases after them scene.
That's nice.
So,
well, speaking of theaters, we are going to try to do Colors Out of Space, if I can ever say its name right.
Which is what you didn't. But
no, of course I didn't, because I always mess that up.
It's not in the theater anymore, though.
No, I'm just saying, because yeah, like, these are newer movies. We're going to try and get do The Invisible Man, but we're not going to be doing it for the Monster March Madness episodes. So if you do get it in March, it's just a bonus. So calm yourself.
But you probably won't.
We're supposed to get Kenny back on for Godzilla King of the Monsters, which may be the next episode. If you want more details, or if you want to talk to us in a more expedient fashion, follow us on Twitter. The link should be in the description.
Yep.
And I do my best to keep an eye on that daily. If you're listening to this on YouTube, like and subscribe, leave a comment, thanks. And tell us, even if it's on Twitter, or an email, or a comment, did you like The Blob, whether it be this one, or the 80s remake? And would you want to see a Rob Zombie's The Blob movie? Because, like, I'm a little on the fence on that. Like, I know he can make some good stuff, and, you know, some of it has these wonderful horror aspects of it, but at the same time, it's The Blob. So, who knows?
Yeah, we did recently receive an email from Richard S., who I think you said has commented on YouTube before.
Yeah, he's been with us for a little while now.
But he actually mentioned in his email about how he enjoys it when you express your love for women who scream in movies.
Yes.
There's a bit of a tie in there.
Well, hey, we actually have one that I love in this one, so there we go.
I think he's being
facetious.
Facetious, yes, but it's true in this particular case. And that's all we have to say about the Blob. We'll see you next time.
You just call me Bub? Later.